was that...
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the July 1st, A Global Focus program. This second hour segment will feature tonight's interview with L.A. Marzulli, author, researcher, and lecturer. L.A. Marzulli's website can be found at www.lamarzulli.net. Welcome, everyone. Trish Sheridan speaking, host of A Global Focus. Tonight's guest is L.A. Marzulli. A Global Focus airs live on the International Paranormal Radio Network with its anchor station, UPRN, 105.7 FM New Orleans. Other listening venues include U.S. Stream TV, Live 365, Awcast and Shoutcast, and mobile phone by dialing 704-631-4060 and entering the four-digit station ID code 2899. Thank you to Taldo, owner of the Paranormal Radio Network, for making these broadcasts possible. L.A. Marzulli, this evening's guest, is an author, researcher, lecturer. L.A. Marzulli is the author of the Nephilim Trilogy. The Nephilim Trilogy made the CBA bestsellers list and continues to thrill readers a decade after the first book in the series was published. Marzulli received an honorary doctorate from Pacific International University for his work on the Nephilim Trilogy. Marzulli is also the author of the nonfiction work, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. The book packs a hard-hitting expose of how the current political landscape may bring about ancient biblical prophecies, which then may trigger supernatural events that are foretold in the book of Daniel and Revelation. His latest offering, The Alien Interviews, features 17 personal, intense interviews with people who have been directly involved with the UFO phenomena. The book was written for the skeptic, with various worldviews presented as to what this phenomena may be. Marzulli teamed up with film producer Richard Shaw to create the Watchers series, their first offering, Watchers 1, UFOs Are Real, Burgeoning, and Not Going Away, is in its fifth printing, while Watchers 2, Signs in the Heavens and Earth, may be the only DVD that offers a biblical answer to the off-the-charts weather activity that we are experiencing. With all the tornadoes, earthquakes of 7.0 magnitude and greater, flooding, riots, and the rise of lawlessness, it's not business as usual. Marzulli has lectured on the fascinating subjects, presenting his exhaustive research at conferences and churches, as well as appearances and interviews on numerous national radio and television programs. Welcome to the program, L.A. I and the audience look forward to hearing of your research and your popular and intriguing books, website, and blog. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me here. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Well, you know, L.A., I had the chance to read this week your book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. Several of the topics and concepts therein fascinate, and your arguments are well presented. A very timely book.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Now, L.A., you believe that the current world events, whether political, natural, or supernatural, are leading to the fulfillment of prophecy. Now, one key geographic site mentioned is the Temple Mount, and of course, Israel, the land of Israel itself. There have been reports of important archaeological sites from the period of the ancient, or archaeological artifacts from the period of the ancient Judea Kingdom located in the area of the Temple Mount. And you mentioned journalist Matt Friedman's article of November 17, 2006 as to an alleged removal in 1999 of some of the material in the Temple Mount vicinity. Very interesting.
Well, it is. And what we see is that there are, unfortunately, there's this tension between the Arab nations which surround Israel and specifically the Muslims, with all due respect, that try to say that the Jews were never there, there's no Jewish presence. I have the Jewish presence was greatly exaggerated or never there. I have a pamphlet, a reproduction of the pamphlet from 1923, presented and written, at least attributed to the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, this obviously the man is an imam, was considered a priest or a pastor in the Muslim religion. And in the beginning of that that small little pamphlet, remember this is 1923, and it's specifically written for the tourist. He talks about that the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque are built on the remains of the Temple Mount that at one time held or supported Solomon's Temple. And he says in that little pamphlet, of this no one can dispute. It is an undisputed historical fact. Yet we fast forward to 2011 and we see that that's exactly the opposite of what we are hearing, that the Jews were never there, they have no right to the land, how dare they come back, two-state solution, our President Obama saying that we need to return the 67 borders, which, of course, is completely indefensible. We hear also that Iran now may have as many as 4 nukes. We're not sure. They've got intercontinental ballistic missiles, which are capable of hitting any city in Israel and also in Europe. Lots of saber-rattling going on in the Middle East. And, of course, we see the Arab Spring, which has brought about the toppling of dictators like Hosni Mubarak and the dictator in Tunisia. And, of course, Assad in Syria is fighting for his political life and his kingdom, because we see that Syria is on the brink of complete chaos. So it's what's alarming to me, Trish, is that we see that all eyes are really turned towards Israel. A few months ago, there was a day that the Arabs celebrate. The Arabs mourn. It's called Al-Nakba Day. It means a catastrophe. It's the day that Israel became a state, a independent country. And they celebrate that literally for decades now. And they mourn that day. Well, the Third Intifada, which was fueled along by Facebook and Twitter and other social networking sites, the plan was to pour across Israel from all of its borders, from Iraq, from Lebanon, from Jordan, from Egypt, from every place, Syria. And this did happen on a small level, and specifically in Syria, where rumor has it that Assad paid the demonstrators $1,000 each to try to come across the Israeli border, which responded by defending their borders, which they have a right to do. So we see that the tension is really fueled by two supernatural events that are opposing one another. And one must understand this, that the supernatural events that are shaping and coloring the world in which we live have shaped the body politic. And what I mean by that is that the Arabs and the Muslims and those surrounding nations believe in a set of supernatural events which have certainly colored the body politic. I mean, Saudi Arabia is under Sharia law. That comes from the writings of the Quran and, of course, the Hadith afterwards, all based on the supernatural event that Muhammad supposedly spoke to this angel Gabriel and dictated the Quran to him, and Muhammad couldn't read or write, but orally transmitted the Quran, and later on it was written down. So 1.4 billion Muslims on the world believe in this set of supernatural events. Well, the tension is created because the Jews believe in another set of supernatural events. And they don't believe in the Prophet Muhammad. They believe in Yahweh. They believe in the God of the Jewish Bible. And they believe in, let's say, Moses parting the Red Sea. And that has certainly shaped and colored the body politic in Israel. They celebrate the Passover. That's a supernatural event of the angel of death passing over the firstborn of the Egyptian, and of course, or the Israelites, and slaying the firstborn of the Egyptian that happened roughly 4,000 years ago. So we see that supernatural events have colored and shaped the body politic in all nations of this world, including the United States. And that begs the question, if supernatural events have happened then, will they, in fact, are happening now? And of course, the short answer to that is yes, they are. They're happening all over the place. Stuff is manifesting like I've never seen it before.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, your book presents very well-positioned, well-explained arguments. You present, for example, an interesting concept as to how this conflict as to Israel's right to exist is based on these supernatural elements, and that this conflict may provoke an open ET disclosure and presence.
Correct. And what I mean by that, let me elaborate, that... And this is, I mean, this is like a, we could spend the rest of the show just talking about this one dynamic. But one must realize that if there is a coming great deception, as prophecy warns us of, specifically that men will faint from fear from what is coming on the earth, which is, again, is a very broad umbrella. There will be signs in the heavens and the earth, again, broad umbrella. But what we do see is that the signs are here. We are seeing mile-wide craft, which is being photographed. Look at the Phoenix Lights. Look at the 2007 craft over the English Channel. Look at the Stevensville Lights, and on it goes. What we see is that with the advent of Darwinism, before Darwin, it was the Western world predominantly had a Judeo-Christian worldview. That's pretty much undisputed. And with Darwin and the theory of evolution, and by the way, it is just a theory, it's never been proven, what we see is a undermining of those principles, of that worldview, and replacing it with what? Well, Darwinism. But that still leaves a big question. How did we get here? Where did life begin? When Ben Stein in his movie Expelled sits down with what I believe is one of the premier evolutionists of the 21st century, Richard Dawkins, and poses the question, okay, Rich, where did life come from? All Dawkins can come up with is, well, maybe millions of years ago in another galaxy, a race of aliens created us. Well, that's an intellectually bankrupt argument. The fact is he has no idea. He has no clue where life began. But it's intellectual fascism to believe that a supernatural being created us somehow from nothing, which is what created all this, spoke it into existence, which is what the scriptures and prophecy tells us. So why is it that somehow he can embrace his mythos or his fairy tale, and that's okay, but we can't embrace ours? See, that's intellectual fascism. The fact is, if we're intellectually honest, no one knows where we are, how we got here, and where we're going. And to me, the best set of mythos, I use that term extremely loosely, is the Judeo-Christian prophetic Bible, which has all these prophecies linked up one after another. They all interlock, all dovetail, intersect together, and they tell of the times in which we are living in. And unfortunately, Dawkins has nothing to fall back on. So I will cast my chips in that game. The idea of the Judeo-Christian worldview, to me, makes the most sense. And what we are seeing is the manifestation, which I call the great, great deception, which fits guys like Dawkins and other people. It fits Georgios Tsoukalos and Ancient Aliens, of which I was on season one and season two. It fits their worldview that somehow we were seated here by ancient astronauts. And, you know, they try to offer proof in all those episodes on the History Channel. But they take things well out of context. They censor any opposing opinion, and certainly I was definitely censored. They interviewed me for 3 hours for season one and 2 hours for season two. I was on for about a minute season one and maybe 2 or 3 minutes season two, heavily edited, and to make it look like I was promulgating their point of view. And to me, that's intellectually dishonest. Why are they so afraid of an opposing or an alternative viewpoint to their, to their theory? Obviously, they are promulgating, they are voicing one opinion and one opinion only, and anyone who disagrees with that will be severely edited, of course, like I was. What event, here's an ancient prophetic text tell us, that in the latter days, there'll be a one-world religious system. Okay, that's interesting. Well, that's insane. How the heck do you get 1.8 billion Christians, 1.4 billion Muslims, 1.2 billion Hindus, and hundreds of thousands of millions of other devotees to their particular worldview or belief system to somehow drop what they believe and believe something else? How do you create a one-world religious system? Well, when E.T. shows up, there's your answer. There's your answer. And they will say, and already the exopolitic crowd like Stephen Greer and others are promulgating this view. Certainly Richard Dawkins is promulgating it. They will say that E.T. created all life on this planet. They genetically manipulated all life, including early man. They started the world's earliest civilizations. They created our religions. Our ancestors worshiped them as gods. And now they are back at this critical juncture in human history, human evolution, to usher us into a time of peace, prosperity, and knowledge. And look, I'm saying this a priori, well ahead of in advance, that this is a cosmic deception of just, we've never had anything like this. It was prophesied thousands of years ago, and I believe we're being set up for it. And I believe Darwin, in fact, is the linchpin which allows this deception. It undermines a worldview, and in order to present a new worldview, you must first undermine the existing worldview to present the new worldview, and that's what we're looking at. Certainly with movies like Knowing, Race to Witch Mountain, Super 8, the new one that's out now, District 9, the movies V, Katy Perry's E.T. video, it's being deliberately thrown in our faces on an ongoing basis.
Those are very intriguing concepts. Now, L.A., to be frank, I do appreciate the various spectral research of the various individuals studying in great detail this field, but several of your points are compelling. Now, one that I found very interesting was the aspect of the Nephilim presence during the biblical period, and you reference the description of the Baalbek monuments in the Bekaa Valley of Lebanon. This was very intriguing. I didn't hear of them. I guess these structures are some of the oldest megalithic sites on Earth. You mentioned the, I hope I'm correctly pronouncing it, Trilithon stones being the largest
Correct.
Ever used on Earth for construction purposes. That's very impressive.
Well, the reason why I chose Baalbek was guys like Zawi Hawass, which is sort of the grand poobah of the Giza Plateau, he's an archaeologist, Dr. Zawi Hawass, maintains that the Egyptians built the pyramids. Well, we can get into that and argue it till the cows come home. I don't believe that the Egyptians built the pyramids. There's no way that they built the pyramids. They didn't have the technology, and they didn't have a know-how, simply put. And there are no hieroglyphics. There's certainly not a tomb. I believe that the cartouche found above the king's chamber was added well after the fact, thousands and thousands of years after the fact. Here's the deal. The reason why I chose Baalbek is, unlike the Giza site, which is a very large plateau, which in fact you could employ or deploy thousands and thousands of people and ramps and elephants and sand ramps and all this other stuff, Baalbek offers none of that. Baalbek is a very narrow area. There's not a staging area that you can, you know, there's not enough area to stage some sort of a building project. And yet, one of the pictures that I show in my presentations is the largest stone ever hewn by human or otherwise hands on this planet. This thing, I believe, is like 76 feet long or thereabouts, 14 feet wide on one side, 16 feet on the other side, roughly. I'm giving you rough dimensions. And weighs, you know, thousands of tons. It's just ridiculous how big this thing is. It dwarfs the human presence, and it begs the question, who in their right mind would get up one morning and go, hey, guys, let's make the biggest stone we possibly can and then move it. It begs the question, how did they move the stones? And it's a very enigmatic riddle, which no one can come up with an answer to. I've seen some stuff on the History Channel, which is just laughable. They say that what they did to move these things is they had earth, and they would pile up the earth next to the stone, and then all these people would use as a fulcrum, and they would use large timbers as a lever, right? And then they would all pull back on the timbers, and the stone would roll. It's just like...
Sounds feasible.
It's just,
mm-hmm.
It's just laughable. I mean, and so let me see, how did they get the stones a quarter mile away from the quarry to the temple? But see, when you begin to factor in that the locals, even to this day, say that the giants built Baalbek, and when we realize that the Nephilim, according to some accounts, and I'll be very conservative, we know that some giants, the Irish giant was 12 feet, I believe Goliath, the biblical giant, could have been roughly 12 feet. Some people hold a more conservative estimation of that height. Certainly Og, who's another character from the ancient prophetic text, was about 15 feet. Other people speculate that the first incursion when the Nephilim roamed the earth, remember, it was not a weekend incursion. They were here for about 400 years, maybe a little longer. And let's just round it off at 20 feet. The high being 36 feet, and... Okay, let's be conservative. Let's knock it down about 19, 20 feet. And you remember that these creatures are demonically enhanced. They're super. You think the Incredible Hulk here. They're not normal. They're not. A 20-foot being is not a normal human being. And think of the calorie intake that these beings. And remember, they're demonic. The Nephilim, we haven't gotten into this yet, but the Nephilim are the offspring of the fallen angels and the women of Earth. That's what the text tells us, not only in Genesis, but in the Enochian account, which is found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It says very specifically that the Nephilim were the byproduct. And therefore, they are literally demonically enhanced. Fallen angels, human beings, they're demonically enhanced. They're superhumans. And all of a sudden, you get, 20 of these guys around these rocks. Remember, 20 feet tall, think the Incredible Hulk. There's your answer. But see, archaeologists and anthropologists won't go there because it opens the door to the supernatural. And most anthropologists and archaeologists are Darwinists, so they can't go there. And so they'll never find the answer, in my opinion, because the answer is a supernatural one.
That's an intriguing concept. You know, when you were mentioning the Great Pyramids, I was noting, you had referenced, rather, L.A., the consistent viewpoint of Dr. Zahi Hawass, Egypt's Minister of State for Antiquities, that the Great Pyramids were constructed by human hands.
Right.
And you imply that these great monuments there and at the Baalbek site could have been produced by more than human agency. And, you know, this aspect of more than human knowledge has been researched as a possibility by such excellent researchers in the field as Dennis Balthaser, board member of the advisory board for the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association. Though I have to add that I do believe Dennis Balthaser does believe, he's a devout Christian, very nice person, he does believe in the concept of a full spectrum of an ET presence, but he does. He is researching the fact that the monuments at Egypt may be far older than they are purported to be, and perhaps constructed with the benefit of more than human knowledge. So, very interesting point you've made. Now, you know, L.A., you note in your book the concept of fallen angels and Nephilim in the biblical period, that concept, that proposed scenario that there was an exchange of technology with humans for access to humans, and in that particular case, human women. Now, is it correct you believe now that a similar scenario could now be in place where an exchange for access to resources, such as human biological resources, some human groups or parties are receiving advanced technology?
Well, that's exactly what we see. We hear rumors of some sort of quid pro quo happening back in the late 40s, early 50s, where we were given technology, and they were given access to the population, which is exactly, not exactly, but similar to what we see in the Genesis and the Enochian account that happened with the B'nai Elohim, except it's different, isn't it? We also hear from ancient prophetic texts, again, prophecy warning us that in the latter days, their seed will mingle with the seed of women, but they shall not cleave with them. And their seed there, of course, talks about the fallen angels. And the word mingle with them, or cleave to them, rather, they will not cleave to them, is the same word in the Hebrew that we get for marriage back in Genesis 6, and for them in marriage wives, talking about the fallen angels. So once again, this mirrors the abduction phenomena, doesn't it? There's no marriage that takes place. The women are taken. They are abducted. Gynecological experiments happen. Some people believe, as I do, that implants are put in, and I've handled these implants. They are real. I've interviewed Dr. Lear numerous times. I've seen the x-rays. I've held the implants in my hand. I know of what he speaks. I've looked at these things under a electron microscope, seen the nanotechnology, seen the photographs of that. This stuff is real. It's changing the DNA. And this is exactly what happened way back in Genesis 6, except it's got a modern twist to it. And what is coming is unprecedented. What is coming is unprecedented. But this is all part of this great cosmic ruse, which I believe is about to take place. And most people, look, why would ancient prophecy tell us this? That people will believe a lie because they do not know the truth. That they are sent strong delusion because they did not believe the truth. I mean, there it is. It's right there. That prophecy is 2,000 years old, and we're in it. We are immersed in it. Strong delusion because they do not believe the truth. What is the truth? Well, it goes back to our discussion with Richard Dawkins when Ben Stein says, hey, Rich, where did life come from? And there is no God. There is no higher being, no intelligent creation, no intelligent design. Oh, no. We were created by a race of aliens. Well, who created them? See, it's a straw man argument. It's just absurd. Who created them? Well, we don't know. Well, you don't know. You're intellectually bankrupt. But it's intellectual fascism for allowing me to point that perhaps there's an intelligent designer here that's creating this stuff. And that begs the question, if there is such, is that entity benevolent, good, or malevolent, evil? Can we know this entity? Has he made himself known? Are in fact, and this is the title of my new book, involved in some cosmic chess match, that's the title of my new book coming out in September, which has been raging in the other dimension for millennia. And of course, my answer to that is, of course we are. We are a casualty of this cosmic chess match, this cosmic war, which has been raging and is now spilling out over into this dimension.
That's very intriguing, L.A. You know, I'd like to note that next week, Daryl Sims will be speaking as guest. Daryl and his group, the Saber Team, is conducting a study and development of protocol as to the possibility of alien DNA being found at abduction sites and on experiencers. Do you think that alleged alien DNA could be possible in the human genome?
This is what I think on that, and this is based on the findings of Dr. Roger Lear. I've held the chip. I've asked Dr. Roger Lear, what is this thing? He believes, as I do, that they are changing these chips, these implants, somehow manipulating the human DNA. They are prototypes manipulating the DNA. Here's something to think about. There are prophecies that talk about the mark of the beast, and those prophecies are such, let me just, and this is interesting, one prophecy says it will be like the days of Noah when the Son of Man returns. What differentiates the days of Noah? The Nephilim, presence of the fallen angels. Okay, hold that thought. Now go to Revelation where it says, we won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without the mark. A little later on it says that anyone who takes the mark is instantly judged. There's no redemption. You can't say, gee, I'm sorry I took this. Well, that sounds severe, doesn't it? A little further on we read, men will seek death and not find it. What the heck are we talking about here? I propose to you, and this is all in the new book I'm working on, which will come out in September, once again, plug, shameless plug. But I
that
propose
sounds interesting.
To you,
mm-hmm.
I propose to you that this mark of the beast will be a chip which is implanted, which will elongate the human lifespan to 500, 600, 700 years, disease-free. That's what they will claim it will do. And, of course, with that chip, you become a Nephilim. That's what you become. And that fulfills all those prophecies. It's a scenario which fulfills all those ancient prophecies which have lain dormant for almost 2,000 years.
Boy, that's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
It's alarming. It's alarming. The concept is alarming. I will say this, too. You have some interesting discussion as to Tom Horn's work on the digital angel and other developments as to a chip. He discusses
right.
it in his books and at the Raiders News mm-hmm. Network. Now, you know, and also, L.A., here, I'd like to note the excellent work that we've been doing at ICAR and other researchers on the possible aspects of experiencers, not only what they've experienced, but also their blood type, so forth. They're wonderful people. They're very bright people. And this is such an important study. That's why I think it's so important for me to produce a full spectrum of experts with great expertise and devotion to their research to explain the significance of the UFO and ET presence in today's world. And, you know, we've had, for example, a brilliant researcher on the program recently. His name is Jim Maroney. I guess I'd call him a health administration official. He also is a professor, who spoke of a possible alien interest in the human central nervous system. He thinks that there could be a possible, I gathered from his work, and I hope I'm correct here, that there could be a possible alien targeting of human brain and central nervous systems. And I'm sorry, the central nervous system. Have you received any indications as to a possible alien interest in those areas?
Well, I think, first of all, when we're talking about aliens, I would you know, defer to that these are not, you know, from the Pleiades or Zeta Reticuli. These are interdimensional beings. Jacques Vallée certainly holds that view, as others do. The question is, you know, what are we looking at? What is it really? And there's different points of view. Certainly, the exopolitic crowd believes that these are extraterrestrials, and that they seeded us here, but they created all life on this planet and genetically manipulated us and on it goes, right? Which is fine. That's a particular worldview. And from that, the study of, you know, the nervous system and the brain and all this and the blood types and what we got to understand is that, in my opinion, this is the great deception. These are not extraterrestrial beings. They are interdimensional beings. They are highly malevolent. Highly malevolent. As experiencers will tell you, who haven't checked their powers of reason at the door, they lie all the time. They habitually lie. As Chuck Sikowski, a MUFON investigator, at one time was the lead of, you know, Pennsylvania, state of Pennsylvania, lead guy in MUFON. I don't think he is anymore. I think he stepped away from that position. But I actually include this, the UFO dirty little secret, where we know the cattle mutilations exist. Well, we've got autopsies of a human mutilation. We're off the charts here. We've just left Kansas. We're not in Kansas anymore. It's not the benevolent ET scenario. And we see the cattle mutilations continue year after year unabated, and it's deliberate. Why not just take the cow and keep it in the ship or drop it in the ocean or whatever? No. They deliberately put the cow back or the steer back in the field, and what does it do? It causes fear. The ranchers are totally freaked. Okay, an investigator like Lula Moulton Howe has seen these over decades now, so she's become accustomed to them. But you've never seen one, you know, you're kind of going, oh my gosh, what and who did this and why? And law enforcement, in the decades that have ensued, have never brought one person to trial over the mutilations, to the best of my knowledge. So these are the dirty little secrets that the UFO community dismisses as, well, they're beyond us. Baloney. That's nonsense. You see, if you have an entity, and I've talked to experiencers, okay? I've interviewed experiencers, and I know of what I speak. And they all say the same thing. Most of them say the same thing. That they get to the point where they realize that these entities lie. They deliberately lie to them. When a person lies or an entity lies, that means that they know what the truth is, but they are deliberately engaging in obfuscation for their own end means. They have it's a means to an end. They're saying something and deliberately leading a person away from the truth deliberately to attain and achieve their own ends. And that, my friend, is malevolent. That is evil. That is evil. Now, if you want to check your mind at the door and say, well, they're beyond good and evil, that's, you can do that. But lying is malicious. And lying can get people into all sorts of trouble. And that's what these entities do.
That's a strong argument there. I know, L.A., I appreciated your reference to experiencer Karina Sable's accounts. Correct. Now, from her interviews on Joe Montaldo's UFO Undercover, Karina presents as highly intelligent. She, as do many others, including Joe Montaldo, international director of ICAR, believe that the aliens' agenda reflects the alien purpose.
Well, I mean, there it is.
Correctly said that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there it is again, isn't it, where we see that it's all about the alien purpose and not about, and if you want to check your mind at the door, and worldview at the door, that's fine. And certainly, with all due respect to Whitley Strieber, he's done that. When you read the early accounts of Strieber's interaction with these beings, he was terrified. And actually, in communion, he says, was I looking at the demons that were written about of old? And later on, he just embraces them and accepts them. That is what I would call the Stockholm Syndrome, which we see. We know that that's a real condition where the person who's been abducted or kidnapped or whatever begins to empathize with his tormentors, which is exactly what Whitley has done, with all due respect. Sable is an interesting case because it's ongoing. The abduction that I interviewed her to in the Alien Interviews book, and one of the abductions was done in broad daylight and seen by multiple witnesses. So, you know, this stuff it's real. It's not imaginary. And the problem is, if we want to check our worldview and what we believe at the door, then anything goes. You see, if there are no absolutes, then anything goes. If we're just created here if Darwinism is true, and get where I'm going with this, if Darwinism is true, then survival of the fittest, that certainly makes sense. What most people don't understand is Hitler, Adolf Hitler, that's what he stood on. He stood on survival of the fittest. He was able to build his program and his ideology based on Darwinism and his master race. You don't hear eugenics talked about anymore in this country. You don't talk about it. But go back to the 20s and 30s, and eugenics is everywhere. It's all based on Darwinism. It's all based on survival of the fittest. What does survival of the fittest lead to? Well, the Jews are inferior, right? They're vermin. Therefore, we can kill them. The dark races are inferior. Therefore, we can sterilize them. Look what we did to the blacks in this country in the 20s and 30s. Don't take my word for it. Look at the eugenics program. That's where it all stems from. Why? All based on Darwinism. The white races are the most, you know, evolved. The dark races are not so evolved. I'm not making this stuff up. It's all been cleaned up, but that's what Darwinism, that's where it originally led. Oh, we swept all that under the rug. Planned Parenthood, the same thing, to control the undesirable elements of the population in America. Look, you know, do your homework and check it out. Contrast that to our declaration, which is based on Judeo-Christian principles, which says we have God-given rights and all men are created equal. Well, what are they pointing back to? Which paradigm do you want to live under? Where there are no absolutes, or the absolute says, even though it wasn't lived up in this country, because the genocide of the First Nation people, the American Indian, and the slavery, the horrors of slavery that happened in this country, which led to a devastating war, we didn't live up to it. But we go back to those principles, and it says that all men are created equal. It's pointing back to the fact that we are all created in the image and likeness of Yahweh, of the Most High God, Elohim. Which paradigm do you want to live under? Where, you know, you're inferior because of a caste system in India, or you're inferior because of the color of your skin, as Darwinism and the eugenics of the 20s and 30s taught us, or the umbrella that says all men are created equal and have certain inalienable rights bestowed on them because of their creator. I know which one I want to live under. It's a no-brainer.
Strong argument. Well, you know, L.A., we had an interesting guest about a month ago, researcher and author Len Kasten, and he was discussing his beliefs that Hitler and the Third Reich could have been greatly influenced by a negative occultic influence. Now, L.A., do you believe as well that the Third Reich could have been so influenced and that perhaps the horrors of the Holocaust or Shoah could have opened a portal?
Absolutely, and I document all this. The Holocaust was ritualistic, satanic blood sacrifice. That's what it was. Make no mistake about it. When we read about the 70,000 Mayans who were ritualistically slaughtered on the temples, it's the same deal, except it's with the Jews. And it opened up portals, absolutely. This has been going on for thousands of years. Go back and study the ancient Sumerians. Just look at any of the ziggurats that were made all throughout the Middle East in the ancient world. Look at the ziggurats here, human sacrifice. Look at the Druids, human sacrifice, bloodletting, because that's how the powers, that's when, in satanic ritual abuse, which is an extremely dark, grisly subject, and I really don't want to get into a whole deal about that, but basically, when someone who's engaged in this sort of activity, when they torture and kill someone, they prolong that torture as long as they can. Because the more fear and the more anxiety they, in the victim, the more demons can enter in and empower them. And when they finally kill the victim, all those demons which have been generated around that blood and that torture now go into the person. That's what it's about. And that's what occult activity is. That's what they do. What most people don't understand is that the Fourth Reich, I believe, is now in the United States, in the sense, and it's documented, that at the end of World War II, many of the Nazis in the intelligence community and the medical community and the scientific community, their dossiers were cleaned up, they were paper-clipped with new false dossiers and documents, and they were allowed to come into this country. My gosh, what did we let in? What did we let in here? And that some of that ideology has never left, And what most people don't understand is what Hitler did prior to coming to power, when he came to power, and national socialism is what we are seeing now in this country, with Obama taking over and the federal government taking over aspects like the banking system, the automotive system, and on it goes. This is exactly what happened, the nationalization. That's what national socialism is. And it happened in World War II, led to World War II, but that's what Hitler stood on, and that's what we see exactly happening in this country. People need to understand that we are in tenuous, dire times here in this country, and we have lost, or we are about to lose, many of the constitutional rights that our forefathers fought for. But, you know, we are dumbed down with the Casey Anthony trial, Wiener's Wiener, the antics of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lady Gaga's latest nonsense, Madonna's lip block with Britney, and on it goes.
Those are powerful statements. L.A.,
thank
we
you.
Have about 4 minutes before the end of the program. I have one question here from chat room, one of our researchers here, Nora's Boy. But before I ask the question, I just wanted to note as well that I do have friends who are Mormons, very bright people. But it's an intriguing question. Nora's Boy's question is this. We do hear a lot about the Nephilim in the biblical lands, but they also in America, such as that the angel Moroni, who dictated the messages that became the Book of Mormon, etc. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it goes back to the essence of the case is, who is the angel Moroni, and why does he wait, 1,800 years to show up and dictate, another gospel? Why is it that somehow what was there for 2,000 years is somehow updated? We see the same thing in Islam, where an angel, we talked about this, that the two conflicting supernatural points of view. So the question is, with all due respect to Mormons, did anyone test the spirits here? How do we know that this angel was benevolent? And what we know from the writings of Smith, that there was actually a talking salamander at one point. So, this is... Again, this stuff gets way out of hand here, and of course it is the supernatural that's manifesting, and what it does is it leads people away from what the gospel of Yeshua or Jesus was for basically 1,800 years and supplants it with another gospel. It's a whole different system. Mormonism differs in Christianity. They are compatible in some ways, but there's a huge difference. And again, it goes back to one person receiving a set of supernatural events, and no one ever bothers to test the spirit and find out who this Moroni guy really was. That's the essence of the case.
Very interesting explanation, and thank you as well for that question, Norris Boy. Now, this to me... Perhaps correlates to your comments about Billy Meyer, that he could have had an encounter with beings, for example, that Semjase, is that the correct pronunciation?
Correct.
You referenced that, yes, and pardon the interruption, you referenced L.A. that there's a possible connection with Semjase, to Indian figure described as a fallen angel.
Correct.
And apparently the Semjase mentioned some inaccurate information. I'm sorry, go ahead with the details.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this, and that's my discovery. I believe I was the first person on the planet to put those two together. The reason for this is, in 1976, I went out and I got Meyer's book and I read it cover to cover and knew about that so-called plea of the Enkosmonaut by the name of Sannyasi. When later on I got the Book of Enoch and read that, and this was about 1988, something like that, right before 1990, I read the Book of Enoch, and lo and behold, there was the same name. And we're either looking at an elaborate hoax from Edward Billy Meyer, where he's going, hey, I'm going to create a UFO thing, I'm looking for a name of an extraterrestrial, and he had access to the Book of Enoch, which was not widely accessible back then. There was no internet. Yeah, you could get it, but it still was not widely accessible. Could he have had a copy of that? Of course he could have. Or it could be that we are looking at an interdimensional being thousands of years old, which is known as a fallen angel in the Book of Enoch, in the Enochian account, now once again manifesting, just like prophecy tells us it would. And lo and behold, it's the ringleader that the Book of Enoch says. And who does every Billy Meyer contact? Sannyasi. I rest my case. I rest my case.
Very intriguing. Well, you know, L.A., 2 weeks ago, during the program with guest Nick Redfern, we had a great discussion on the Mothman. We have one of our ICAR directors, our West Virginia director, who is so informed on that and other subjects. She's a great researcher. Well, anyway, on Mothman, you believe that this creature might be of a demonic provenance because you mentioned that the individuals who witnessed the Mothman seemed forever somewhat impacted by the sight.
Look, I just spoke with Travis Short today. Travis did a film which is still not out called Dark Wings. It may never get edited. Their lives, Charlie McCracken and Travis Short, literally, no pun intended, were short-circuited, and I mean that. Marriage is derailed, people dying, the whole thing. Linda Scarberry, who was the initial contactee, had a long, slow decline. She recently passed away this year. Yeah, and she was one of the first witnesses that contacted. She never recovered from that contact. What we need to understand is that we are told what these entities like to do to us. They come to rob, kill, and destroy. That's what we're told. That's what they do. Rob, kill, and destroy. Was Linda Scarberry's life robbed from her? Yes. Was it eventually destroyed? Absolutely. Was it eventually she succumbed to death? Absolutely. Travis, look at Travis Short. Look at Charlie McCracken's lives. Their lives were a train wreck. Travis is getting his life back together, but Charlie is like lots of medical problems. Is this a coincidence? Baloney. It's not coincidence at all. When I interviewed Lawrence Gray in the Alien Interview book, I interviewed him. This is a man, the only person I've ever been able to interview that was able to get a victory over the Mothman. And I've stated this on countless shows. When this thing appeared in his room at 3:30 or whatever in the morning, it had dark wings, it had a cape, its head was sunken down to his shoulders. I asked him, what was it like? He gave me one word, wickedness. That's what he said. It was wickedness. He was paralyzed with fear, wickedness. And he said, listen to this. He said, the blood of Jesus. And the moment he said that, the thing began to disappear because there is a name that is greater. And I'm not talking religion here. I'm talking about supernatural elements. And he said, the blood of Jesus. And that thing disappeared. People have got to understand that it's not religion. It's supernatural, spiritual warfare. And this man knew how to wield that, and that's the only person I've ever been able to find that had victory over the Mothman. So, you know, it's like you can embrace any paradigm you want, but that's the paradigm I embrace because it works.
Well, you know, I will say this, L.A., we've got about 2 minutes left, and I want you to discuss your future plans. I'm just going to give a brief summation here, because I am getting older, and I think sometimes I have heart problems and, you know, developments. Now, I have dear friends at ICAR. I have the highest respect for them. They are wonderful researchers, people of great integrity. I also have called on Pastor Joe Jordan to assist years back in helping to successfully deal with concerns I had with gray intrusion in my life. I have seen the effect of the name of Christ or Yeshua on some of these beings, the grays. Now, I do have dear friends at ICAR. I am proud to be a Washington director of ICAR. Some of my dear friends here think that it's just a mere illusion that I'm being given, that the name does not have this power. I also have spoken with such great researchers as Melinda Leslie, who thinks that is assertion that gets these things away from you. But your research is very important, and I just had to say that, you know, because I'm getting of an age, I'm older, and at least I have to make that comment. However, I'm also researching other ETs who I think may be neutral, such as the tall whites, but my mind has not been made up on that. But anyway, now, enough of me. I want to get right back, and I also want to, and also one more kind of plug here. Again, thank you, Joe and Linda Montaldo, for being such wonderful friends. You, Daryl Sims, and assistant Patricia Gray have helped me in the past. I appreciate it. Thank you. Also, Joe Jordan, thank you, too. Now, let's get right back to you, L.A., because the program is going to be ending in about a minute. What are your upcoming projects and plans? Do you have any radio programs you want to mention? And your upcoming book, please.
Well, the upcoming book is called The Cosmic Chess Match, but you should have me back on and we can discuss Watchers 2, Signs in the Heavens and Earth. We've got two DVDs that we just made. One is called Watchers 1, UFOs Are Real, Burgeoning and Not Going Away, which is made for the skeptic. The other one is called Watchers 2, Signs in the Heavens and Earth. I was just on George Norrie's show this past Tuesday. They're flying out of here because we've got answers to what's going on with the earthquakes, the floods, the famines, wars and rumors of wars, the volcanic activity. It's all in Watchers 2. Email me. We should do another show specifically just on this documentary. It's an hour long, hard-hitting expose, and it's people need to see this thing because this thing is coming down. It is coming down, and Watchers 2 has answers.
Joe, could I have one more minute to ask a question? When I had read about his latest DVD, Watchers 2, Signs in the Heavens and Earth, it immediately brought to mind that horrible disaster now that is so impacting on Japan.
Fukushima
Daiichi plant. Boy, that and other developments are extremely significant, very troublesome.
I agree. And this ties into these ancient prophetic texts. Mm-hmm. It's all interrelated, and that's what people don't understand. It's all, we are headed towards someone. There is a managed agenda that has been managed by this force called the mystery of iniquity, the secret of lawlessness, and it continues to work. And, you know, that's another discussion. I can't get into that in 30 seconds, but
okay.
It's coming. Have me back. We'll do it. We'll do it again.
I absolutely will. And one last question. One of our researchers here, Sweet Steve, hi there, Sweet, wants to know if these developments might reflect a sort of biblical Holocaust scenario. This, you're probably referencing Revelation here. Am I correct?
Yes. And again, you know, with 30 seconds left, it's almost impossible to answer that. The short answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
We are headed towards the greatest deception foisted on the human race. I call it the coming grace deception. It's a game changer. It changes everything. But it's not what people think. And that's the essence of my work.
Boy, that's interesting. Well, we'll definitely reschedule you. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thanks for having me on.
Great discussion. And everyone, thanks so much for listening. And thanks as well, my friends here in the room, for great questions as well. Take care, everyone. Wonderful weekend. Great holiday.